Join the Wall Street Journal for the WSJ Risk and Compliance Forum happening online May 9th. Together with experts, we'll unpack the latest Russia sanctions, data privacy laws, climate risks, and more. You'll take away a playbook of practical advice that you can use and implement on day one. Register now at wsj.com/risk and save 20% on your ticket using code PODCAST.
This is a special Your Money briefing for Friday, March 31st. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. It's finally spring, and for many Americans, the season of renewal means it's the season to begin the search for a new home. We went to an open house last weekend in Denville, New Jersey, where we ran into Nick Bocci. He and his wife have been looking for a home for more than a year.
I was a little surprised to see a 20-person line out front. Of the 20 or so houses I've seen in the last few months, this is definitely the biggest line.
Even with mortgage rates a lot higher now than they were a year ago, Nick says the market is still really competitive.
Hope that it would decrease a little bit, but doesn't seem like it's going to. So hopefully, you know, I think it's just something we got to live with from now on.
And while the thought of stepping into your new home may be exciting, the process to get there can be endless and frustrating and confusing. But it doesn't have to be. We're launching a 5-part home buying series. We'll talk to personal finance and housing experts about finding the best mortgage rate, avoiding common mistakes, and how the quest to buy a home can play with your head. But let's start at the beginning, the very beginning. Even before you go scrolling through listings, ask yourself this: what can I afford?
One of the biggest challenges for people when it comes to home ownership is that they've kind of been taught that it's only about the mortgage payment and that equals affordability, when nothing could be further from the truth.
My guest today is Lynette Kalfani-Cox. She's a former financial news journalist, author, and CEO of The Money Coach, a financial education company. Hey, Lynette, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
So, Lynette, do people often underestimate the amount of work and preparation that goes into buying a home?
I really do think that the vast majority of Americans underestimate not only the amount of work that it takes to go into buying a home, but what it takes to sustain that house, because sustainable home ownership is really what it's all about. We've seen, obviously, in recent years through a number of financial setbacks and recessions that we've had, that foreclosures have hit certain people, whether it's due to job losses, divorce, a whole bunch of factors. And then not to mention the fact that home prices themselves have become so out of reach, frankly, for a lot of folks.
All right. So let's talk about getting your ducks in order before starting the process. Now, obviously, money is going to be a pivotal part of the process, and people might sort through their finances to figure out how much house they can afford. But is there more to it than that?
I do think there's a lot more than the average person considers when it comes to weighing home affordability. Certainly, the banks are going to give you an indication of what they think you can afford. But I'm always telling people that that's really not the true barometer that you should use. A bank is going to ask you about your DTI or your debt to income ratio. They're going to assess your overall obligations and then come up with a figure that they think is manageable. But frankly, the bank doesn't know all of the rest of what's going on in your personal life. They don't know, for example, if you plan on maybe going back to school or getting a graduate degree. They don't know if you might be in the middle of a separation or a divorce. They don't know if you're planning to have a baby or to add to your family. So you have to always take into account not just the kind of nuts and bolts in financial terms of what a lending officer or a bank says that you can afford, but you have to also think about the stuff that they don't know.
Oh, and the bank won't ask you the stuff that they don't know?
They will ask you the basics around that, and a lot of it is frankly tied to what they actually see on your credit report. And so when it comes to a whole host of other things, the bank doesn't know how frequently you eat out every month, and that's not really their concern. They don't know whether or not you plan to travel in the summer or at any given point during the year. They don't know what your holiday gift giving or spending is like. So all of those other personal or lifestyle expenditures and considerations really do need to be taken into account when you think about your overall cost of living and how that might impact your ability to buy and support a house over the long term.
You know, Lynette, there's one piece of economic data that buyers and sellers focus in on, and that's mortgage rates. So let's say someone is setting out to buy their first home. What should they know about mortgage rates?
Well, for 2023, obviously the big thing is that rates are unfortunately on the rise. Now, we've seen, of course, recent turmoil in the banking sector, and so nobody has a crystal ball. But what we can say unequivocally is we saw rates initially peak back in October of 2022, right around 7%. They've come down now to maybe 6.75%. But overall, the expectation is, of course, that rates are certainly far higher now in 2023 than they were a year ago, substantially higher. So given this, you need to be thinking about your own economic circumstances and whether or not you'd be comfortable getting into a fixed rate mortgage that is going to be kind of a plain vanilla 30-year set it and forget it, or whether or not you'd be willing to hedge a little bit and to consider an adjustable rate mortgage or an ARM, and whether that's right for you. I think you should also be thinking about the term of any loan that you would consider. Certainly not just for people who are buying, but even those who are refinancing, you want to be thinking about, do I want to be in the traditional 30-year note, or would a 20-year better suit me, or even a 15-year? And again, it's going to be based on each individual's circumstances and their budget.
Now, the amount you're going to pay off depends on how much money you've paid up front, the down payment. And this is where the affordability question often trips up a lot of people. How much money should a home buyer be prepared to come up with in a down payment?
Well, I certainly like for people to understand that it's absolutely not a requirement that you come up with, say, a traditional 20% down payment, because a lot of people think, well, geez, I'm never going to be able to afford a house if I had to save up, you know, at that level, especially given regional variations across the country where we've topped $440,000 or so nationwide in terms of median home prices. So if you thought about a 20% down payment, $88,000, maybe $90,000 would be required. But again, that is not required. Depending on the type of loan that you get, you can put down as little as 3.5%. If you get a government insured, an FHA loan, for example. But you do need to understand what happens, whether or not you go the conventional mortgage route or the government insured loan route. And in essence, if you do put down anything less than 20%, then you're going to have to pay mortgage insurance in the form of a mortgage insurance premium or PMI, private mortgage insurance. So you can put down 5%. You can put down 10%. Many lenders will let you put down 15%, of course. But if you don't have at least 20% equity when you're walking in the door, you will have to pay essentially a surcharge every month in the form of monthly insurance.
So those are some ways to figure out what buying a home would cost you. But what if your finances aren't where they need to be to make the numbers add up? We'll talk about how you can get your financial house in order so you can buy a real one after the break.
Hear are the top breaking news, plus the latest on business, politics, and more with the new WSJ headline skill for your Alexa smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, enable WSJ headlines to get started.
So you're thinking of buying a home. You've thought about a price range, you've started building up a down payment, but there's a lot more that goes into how to afford a home than that. Here's more from my conversation with Lynette Kalfani-Cox. Now, you mentioned a credit report earlier. The other important number in all this for a lot of people is their credit score. How important is the credit score really in the home buying process?
Your credit score is hugely important when it comes to buying a home these days. So you absolutely want to make sure that your FICO score is in tip-top shape. And what that means in terms of mortgage lenders is, at a minimum, most want to see a FICO score of 620 points or better. That's kind of like the bare minimum, the cutoff. And again, your FICO score ranges from 300 a low of 300, and we hope you're nowhere down near there, to as high as a perfect 850 FICO score. So 620 is about the minimum to get a yes for most lenders. But then if you have a 700 or better FICO credit score, then you are deemed to have good credit and you'll be able to get good loan rates and terms. I always try to have people be in what I call the perfect credit scoring range, which is really a 760 to an 850 FICO scoring range. And if you do fall into that category, banks are going to fall all over themselves to do business with you. Your credit union, et cetera, they will give you the very best loan terms and rates that are available in the marketplace.
Well, you know, Lynette, people are dealing with a lot these days. Inflation's pretty much torn a hole through people's personal finances, and they might be struggling to keep their credit score in that perfect range or even close to it to get an ideal mortgage rate. What steps can they take to maybe boost their credit score?
There are a number of fairly straightforward steps that anyone can do to boost their credit score, and sometimes to do so fairly quickly. One is if you're already a renter and you have not yet made the leap to home ownership, you can add your rental payment history to your credit reports. Now, you personally can't do this. You have to go through a third party to do it. But many consumers will find that they get a 30, 50, 70 point jump or more in their FICO credit score just from adding this alternative credit data to their credit files. The credit files that are maintained by the big three, by Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. So adding your rental payment history is one way to boost your credit score. You can do it with other things too, like utility payments and so forth. Second, you should obviously make sure you focus on paying all your bills on time every single month without fail. The number one factor in your FICO credit score, 35% of it, is based on how well you pay your bills on time. And so you never want to have any 30-day late payments on your credit reports because a single missed payment can drop your FICO credit score by 50 to 100 points. So you absolutely never want to miss any payments. And then third, I would say lower your credit card balances. So 30% of your FICO credit score is based on the amount of debt that you have outstanding, specifically that credit card debt that a lot of folks are carrying. So when you lower your credit card balances, that tends to boost your FICO credit score.
And so whether you're adding in your rental payments into the formula to try to boost your score by maybe 70 points, maybe you've got some late payments and you might lose 150, that point spread in your credit score can be a real difference maker.
Absolutely. I mean, think about folks who might be at the margins. If you were at a 700 and you had a late payment, for example, and you got dropped down to the 620, 630, 40 category, now all of a sudden you're in a different credit tier and a lender is not going to give you good interest rates. So you really do want to make sure you're paying those obligations on time. Even being though at a, say, a 720, if you have good credit and you're able to boost your credit score further, maybe by 40 points or so, by adding rent payment or other alternative credit data to your credit report, that might put you in the very best of tiers to get the optimal interest rates that are available to consumers in the marketplace. So by all means, do everything in your power to boost those credit scores. I would add also, JR, that there's one other technique that helps in fairly short order to boost one's FICO credit score, and that's a technique called piggybacking. And that's essentially where you get added as an authorized user on someone else's credit card accounts. We've done this with our adult children who are in their early 20s, added them as an authorized user on our credit cards that we've had, say, for 20 years, and they benefit by essentially kind of inherit, if you will, the good long-paying track record and history that my husband and I have on those cards. Our two older kids get the benefit of that, and that's boosted their credit scores as well.
Oh, so sort of like benefit by association.
Absolutely. That's exactly how you could look at it.
All right. So you've got the down payment, the mortgage, the insurance. Those are all big expenses that can be the difference maker when trying to buy a home. But what other expenses should people be aware of to get a better picture of their ability to buy a home?
Well, one of the biggest challenges for people when it comes to home ownership is that they've kind of been taught that it's only about the mortgage payment and that equals affordability, when nothing could be further from the truth. I have an expression that I use where I say, it's a pity that it's not just pity. And what I mean by that is it's a pity, it's a shame that it's not just PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. In reality, there's everything from moving costs, which can be considerable, to furniture, to decorating a home, to repairs, to upgrades, to utility costs, and more when it comes to navigating the home ownership process. So don't ever think for a moment that, oh, I can afford the house payment, I'm good, everything is going to be fine. No, every homeowner can tell you, you're going to have to do some repair that was unexpected. You're going to have some unanticipated cost, whether it's plumbing that needs to be done, electrical work, a leaky roof, or something else, which is why it's a smart idea, if you can swing it, to have a cash reserve where you have 1-2% or so of the value of your home put aside to deal with emergencies, repairs, upgrades, renovations, other things that you might want to or need to do to maintain and to keep your home.
All right, that's Lynette Colfani-Cox, founder and CEO of The Money Coach. Lynette, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, JR.
And once you have your finances in order, it's time to find a home. Join us next Friday for episode 2 of your Money Briefing's home buying series, where we'll take a snapshot of the current housing market. How have falling mortgage rates shifted the balance of power between buyers and sellers? And what's led us to the current nationwide housing shortage? We'll examine what you can expect and what you need to know. And that's it for your Money Briefing this week. Your Money Briefing was produced this week by Ariana Osperu. This episode was mixed by Jess Fenton. Our supervising producer is Melanie Roy, and our executive producer is Chris Zinsley. I'm your host, J.R. Whalen. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.